and welcome to Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. Because of the loss of the legendary Stephen Spurrier, everyone in this business did a memorial to Stephen Spurrier and his legacy. And I started to think about the last time we actually saw him in the Okanagan. It was at the fifth and final Judgment of BC in the Okanagan. When I looked at the lineup of the guests and the judges on the day, I thought, you've got to repeat this. You have to share this moment because there may not be another one. So in this hour, Gurvinder Bhatia, Edmonton Journal, Quench Magazine, DJ Kearney, Dr. Jamie Good, wine journalist, Laura Kitmer, Wines of BC, Stephen Spurrier, Decanter Magazine, Mark Filoteau, Waterfront Bistro, Curtis Colt, good friend of the show, Reese Pender, Master of Wine, Anthony Gismonde, Vancouver Sun, Best of Food and Wine, Sebastian Legoff, Cactus Club, Canada, and the big winners on the day, Manuel Zippiger, Arrowleaf Vineyards, Larry Girella, Stags Hollow, Jack Meyer, Meyer Family Vineyards, and Lindsay O'Rourke, Tightrope. We tasted Pinot Noir, we tasted Riesling, we tasted Chardonnay, and Syrah. 6 BC wines against 4 from the rest of the world. All of the results can be found at mulliganstew.ca and Tasting Room Radio. Please enjoy this liquid ride. This is quite something special. Enjoy. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Moon Cursor. Lots of new wines coming, which is a good thing, since they've sold out of everything but a little bit of Dead of the Night and the award-winning Tariga Nacional. The new wines will be available for sale in the tasting room and online by mid to late April. Moon Cursor will continue with appointment-only tastings, but will accommodate walk-in customers whenever possible. Because of the expected lower-than-normal yields of 2019, they will have less wine for sale this year than they normally would, and they're encouraging everyone, including the club members, to stock up now rather than later. All the details at mooncursor.com. Hello, I'm Terry David Mulligan, and this is Tasting Room Radio. You can find the details for this show at mulliganstew.ca. You will also find the Mulligan Stew podcast, and you will also find Mulligan Stew, the radio show from CKUA. It was my honor and my privilege to join 31 other judges in a roundtable tasting of the Judgment of BC, Year 5, apparently the last year that we're going to do this. It pits BC wines of the same varietal against benchmark wines from around the world. It's all curated and hosted by DJ Kearney, the voice of wine in British Columbia. Initially, I thought I was going to let you hear the opening remarks from DJ and Stephen Spurrier, our special guest. But I did so many interviews with the winners and the judges to get all the comments involved that I had to pass on those opening remarks and simply just let the judges and the winemakers speak for themselves. Led by Stephen Spurrier, we took a full day of blind tasting of 24 of BC's celebrated grape varieties, Riesling, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Syrah, against 16 international benchmarks, hand-chosen to go up against the BC wines. Arrowleaf Cellars ranked first among the Pinot Noir flight. Meyer Family Vineyards came in first for the flight of Chardonnay, with 50th Parallel Estate Winery a very close second. For the Riesling flight, Cedar Creek Winery came in second, St. Hubertus and Oak Bay Estate Winery coming in third. And the final flight of Syrah saw BC Wines take all three top spots, with Tightrope Winery coming in first, Nevue Pan second, and Stags Hollow in third position. One of the judges and someone who's going to be on the show today, international wine judge Jamie Good of Wine Anorak, was saying that Chardonnay has struck me in the last few days, Riesling as well, but Syrah is becoming particularly exciting here. The thing with Syrah is that it can do well planted up north, but it can also do very well in the south, and there are very few varietals that can span both. Oh, speaking of guests, our guest will be Gurvinder Bhatia, representing Alberta and smart wine drinkers everywhere. Dana Van Mulligan, the wine diva. The one and only DJ Kearney. The bad boy of wine, Jamie Good. Laura Kitmer, who was our host and made it possible for me to be in the room. Stephen Spurrier, the man who had the wine shop in Paris, who decided to pit the 1976 Chardonnays and Cabs of California against the French version of those same varietals. And of course, that was called the Shot Heard Round the World, the Judgment of Paris, and changed the wine world forever, simply because those California wines ended up besting the French. Noses were well out of joint. It became a film called Bottle Shock that had almost, 50% of the truth in it and 50% removed. I'll also be talking to chef, sommelier, fishing partner Mark Filito, Curtis Colt, Reese Pender, master of wine, Tony Gismondi, the great Legoff, Sebastian Legoff, the wine director at all Cactus Club locations in Canada. All of those names were just some of the judges I was pleased to share the room with. And then the last segment, they have a party at Poplar Grove, and those who had won step forward. Manuel Zubinger from Arrowleaf convinced his mother and father, Joe and Marguerite, to babysit so he could come in and accept the honor of topping the pole, we'll explain. Larry Girellis from Stags Hollow, Jack Meyer from Meyer Family Vineyards, and Lindsay O'Rourke from Tightrope on the Naramata Bench. This was a wild and crazy day. I do hope you enjoy the show that's about to unfold in front of you. For those of you who believe in BC wines, thumbs up. So that we can enjoy the night and not have to pick this microphone up again, let's recap. What were your thoughts going in? I mean, this is an esteemed group. You know most of these folks. These are friends of yours. The audition process, so to speak, was long and complicated, and you nailed everything down. Where were the surprises for you?
Oh, the surprises for me was some of the classic wines. You know, the Burgundy from Bongrève, the Bethel Heights Chardonnay from Oregon. I was concerned that those wines were going to wipe the rest of the field away, and that didn't happen. So when I was choosing the benchmarks, I want wines that are really, really going to challenge BC, but they have to be, you know, in a close enough price bracket for them to be competitive. And there are a couple of wines that I just was agonizing about putting in. I had to because they mattered, but I'm so surprised at how BC stood up to them.
Did you know what they were going to be tasted against at the time when you chose them?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I was the chief judge for the selection panel, so I knew what our BC competitors were, and so that I did not choose the benchmarks until after I knew what those were.
So really, Deej, the key question here is, between years one and years five, what's happened?
So year one to year five, Chardonnay has evolved. The wines from British Columbia in the Chardonnay flight in 2015 were not universally admired. They didn't do well. They were the bottom of the ranking. And the judges afterwards said they lacked precision. They lacked focus. They were, you know, they were overripe. They were underripe. There wasn't a clear direction towards quality and, you know, Chardonnay and vineyard expression. And then when we look 5 years later, it's a completely different story. Completely different.
So what's changed? The making, our concept of what wine is?
I absolutely think people are learning more and trying harder. I think people are very clear on the styles of Chardonnay they want to make, right? There were some beautiful, you know, taut, flinty, salty wines that had a lot of restraint, but still this core of extravagant fruit. And I think people are just handling oak better. They're handling ripeness better. They're thinking more about picking times and blending. And it really, really showed. And I've been feeling that in the last several years of tasting Chardonnay in BC, that we were moving very quickly to this moment.
Surprisingly, the reds used to boggle my mind. This time around, it's the whites. I'm very impressed with the whites and how you have to really, 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 really think about what it is that you're tasting and smelling. That's a good thing.
Oh, it's such a good thing. I mean, I sat down and tasted every flight, and I tried to erase that part of my brain that knew what all of the wines were and just taste them for the pleasure and think, what would I want to drink? What would I take to a tasting? What would I show somebody in Burgundy from our Chardonnay collection? And I scored them that way. And wow, I'm so proud. Our wines are so smart and so purposeful.
Dana Van Mulligan suggests maybe we could do this every 5 years.
Dana has a very good suggestion, doing it every 5 years. I think what we've learned in the last, in the 1 to 5 judgment, you know, the tribal knowledge, the clear and frank discussion about why we grow these grapes in BC is one that we've had. And I think a 5-year annual judgment is a great, great idea.
Tightrope.
Tightrope Syrah and Tightrope Pinot are very precise, expressive wines. Right? They have that wonderful, I think they embodied what BC does so well, this conjunction of very ripe, rich fruit and high natural acidity. And those wines are just sharp as glass and clear as a bell in their fruit expression. They were gorgeous. They did, you know, they did really, really well in the prelims.
And the vineyard is right over your shoulder.
Exactly. I know. Yeah. No, well done. I mean, Naramata showed very, very well as a whole in this tasting.
Thank you very much for doing this.
You're so welcome, TDM. Thank you for coming. You're such a big part of the BC wine industry.
I love the story.
Me too.
Food, wine, and friends. It doesn't get any better. You're listening to Tasting Room Radio, a celebration of all three, with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
Gravinder Bhatia, Edmonton. Gravinder, tell me about this exercise for you. How was it?
It's fantastic. And, you know, I was at the first one. I mean, we see this phenomenal evolution in terms of what's happening in this province. Mm-hmm. The top producers, I think, have established themselves to be on par with anywhere else in the world. I liked Reese's comment about the fact that blind tasting is becoming harder, and I see this very much so.
You would have seen that from the first year.
Exactly, but even just in general, I mean, you know, having done this now for 25 years, it used to be, when you were blind tasting, it used to be much more clear in terms of where things were from.
Sure.
And as people kind of play with different styles in different countries, it is becoming much, much more difficult. I think the positive side to that is that the BC wine showed very well, regardless of whether we were able to say this was BC or not BC in the blind tasting, the wines all showed really well. And so I think that is something that's really important for people to recognize.
How many of these wines that placed well show up in Alberta?
Actually, quite a few of them. Quite a few of them. I know, Le Vieux-Pin is there. Of course, Cedar
Meyer.
Creek is there. Meyer is there, absolutely. So a lot of these wines are available in Alberta. I wish we had actually more and in greater quantities because sometimes they're a little bit tight, particularly the reserves or the single vineyards. So I've been talking to some of the producers this week and saying, hey, you know, even if it's a small quantity, I think it's important that even just from an exposure standpoint, even if they are able to sell all those single vineyard wines to their wine club or to within the province to restaurants or at their cellar door, I still think it's important that they release small amounts, whether it's for, you know, Alberta, which Alberta is an export market and it's treated as an export market, even though, you know, we look at the BC wine industry as our local wine industry, or to international markets because there's more going to international markets as well. But I think it's important that even for those really small quantity wines, that a little bit is allocated for outside of the province because it's important, I think, that people be able to taste those wines.
Gravinder Bhatia from Edmonton. Is it possible to place Alberta's support of BC wine, its place in how BC wine will go into the future and what Albertans are doing for it?
Oh, I think Alberta has always been a big supporter of the BC wine industry, and I think the BC wine industry has always supported the industry, the hospitality industry in Alberta. I think, you know, sometimes people get a little political, and the industry, the BC industry, wine industry comes into play, which I think is absolutely misplaced, because, you know, the industry is predominantly small business farmers, and to get caught up in the political side of things I think is a little bit ridiculous. But I think at the core of it, Alberta and the hospitality industry and the consumers in Alberta will always support the BC wine industry. I mean, there's a lot of Albertans who own property out here. There's a lot of Albertans who own wineries out here.
Wineries, lots of them.
Exactly.
The good ones.
Exactly, exactly. So I think there was always going to be that core support, regardless of kind of the fringe political things that go on.
Cool. Thank you.
Thanks, Terry.
Gravine Dabadia, Edmonton.
This is Tasting Room Radio.
Dana Van Mulligan, the Wine Diva. How many of these have you done? Have you done them all?
I have not. I last year had to leave because I had a family emergency.
That's right. Were you here for one?
Yes.
Were the Chardonnays part of that one?
One was year one, 2015. It was Chardonnay and Syrah.
So how much have those two varietals changed just in your tasting here today, do you think? Or at least the scene?
I think that Chardonnay has had an international style change. It's not just British Columbia, but I think where I see the difference is the Syrah, and the characteristics we used to see in Syrah several years ago, a little bit of a harshness, and they weren't quite handling it correctly. It really showed. And tasting today, the Syrahs, it was outstanding. You know, our styles have got more finesse. You know, they're more balanced. There's less oak, less of that heaviness. And the Chardonnays, I thought, was really interesting because for me, stylistically, it was very obvious what I loved and very obvious what I did not love. I think it was a mix. It wasn't just BC, you know. So it was very difficult, I think, for a lot of people to gauge. The lines have been blurred, as we were saying. I didn't have so much of a hard time figuring out which wines were BC or international. But the ones I did mistake really shocked me.
Yeah.
It really shocked me.
Me too. I think everybody.
Yeah, of course, of course. That's the beauty of blind tasting. None of us are gods in this whole situation. We just do what we can.
Dana Van Mulligan, the Wine Diva. What was the most surprising thing?
I thought that the Riesling was the weak link of the entire tasting, which surprises me. For BC, Riesling has always been easy for us. And maybe it's because we haven't been making the strides towards those international varieties, which have become so popular around the world. You know, Chardonnay and Pinot Noir and Syrah have become extremely important to everyone. And Riesling, maybe it's got left behind, or I don't know if it's a mixture of the vintages or the, you know, the particular wines we tasted. I just didn't think it showed as well as what I expected.
But they're not going to do this anymore, which implies...
You know, I really think they should do it every 5 years, as opposed to every single year. I think every 5 years, because that'll show us, you know, what's happening. Yeah. We can do the same idea. We can do an all-day tasting, do four key varietals, and do it every 5 years to see how, you know, that benchmark changes and how it increases. I think to have this the last is actually a mistake. I think they should do it again, but just not do it every single year.
Maybe we won't bring that up now. Maybe in the dead of winter. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dana Van Mulligan, the Wine Diva.
You're listening to Tasting Room Radio.
When I saw Sebastian Legoff was in the room and actually was tasting the same wines that I was, I went, oh, there's a mind I can pluck. What have you noticed in those 4 years since you were last here, and what's happened to the industry?
Well, I definitely seen a big improvement in the past 4 years, but more importantly, I've moved from Toronto here in about 15 years ago now, and I've seen a huge improvement in quality and also more focus on, you know, we grow like probably 60 different varietals, but you know, there is like four that we do a very, very good job with, and those four were represented today.
And what do we want to concentrate on?
Well, after the tasting today, Chardonnay, the Meyer Chardonnay was outstanding. I love this wine. It's really, really excellent. Pinot Noir is also, especially from the northern part of the valley, you know, Lake Country and then around West Bank, excellent. The Syrah from the south, really great job. Syrah, Shiraz, whatever you choose to call them. And the Riesling. And it's too bad this is not such a very popular grape, but I think things are changing and more people are interested in that beautiful acidity, refreshing, low alcohol. It's delicious.
Gamay?
I think Gamay will be the next wave. To me, Gamay will be the next wave, but also I've tasted some really great Grüner Veltliner. It's difficult to pronounce, so maybe that will be a tough sell, but...
What about Marcel Roussin?
Marcel Roussin in the south is doing very well, you're right. I tasted one last week, not in the contest of this tasting, but at Marcel from Tinon Creek. Very impressive. Delicious.
And was there one wine that surprised you when you heard the announcements?
So, yes, I voted for it at number one. It came at number one. I didn't know what it was. It was just very good. It was an Aeroleaf. I had never tasted the Aerolive before, and that was outstanding. And the value for money, yeah. It's a $26 bottle of wine. I'm like, you got to run to the store and stock up for Christmas.
Now.
Yeah, go now before it's sold out.
Sebastian Lugoff, where's your job taking you? Where are you living these days?
Vancouver, Toronto. Toronto more. Very exciting. We have 3 properties in Toronto now, so things are really ramping up.
They drink different from us?
Very. I mean, the great thing about BC is the consumer is really pushing for BC wine. They demand it. They love it. They visit the region. They drink it at home. They drink it when they go out to restaurants. A little less. I pour Ontario wines in Ontario. It just doesn't sell as much as BC wines in Vancouver. We see a big difference for us. It's too bad because they do also very, very good wines. When you look at the Gamay, the Cap Franc, and the Pinot, and the Chardonnay coming out of, and the Riesling coming out of Ontario, there is some really delicious wines. And I think maybe Ontario has already focused more than BC on the things they do best.
Well, also, they have to focus on what can survive the winter.
That's another thing. I mean, the winter here is pretty, in the south, it's pretty cold, especially with it like today.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Lee.
Sebastian Lugoff.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Moon Cursor. Lots of new wines coming, which is a good thing, since they've sold out of everything but a little bit of Dead of the Night and the award-winning Tarriga Nacional. The new wines will be available for sale in the tasting room and online by mid to late April. Moon Cursor will continue with appointment-only tastings, but will accommodate walk-in customers whenever possible. Because of the expected lower-than-normal yields of 2019, they will have less wine for sale this year than they normally would, and they're encouraging everyone, including the club members, to stock up now rather than later. All the details at mooncursor.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. And since they've opened the new Crown and Thieves, it's been a glorious, sheer and utter madness. The success has seen them already sell out of 4 wines, The Scoundrel Punch, Chenin Blanc, Gewurztraminer, and Broken Wing Merlot. But luckily, the latest bottling run has replenished the stock with new vintages of Winemaker's Wench, Mr. Hickenbotham Chardonnay, the new Little Nipper Pinot Gris, and the brand new Pinky Blinders Rosé. The wine club has been selling like crazy, and an obvious benefit is one active membership means you are a VIP at all of their locations. All the details at thehatchwines.com.
2 of my favorite people in the whole world, Curtis Colt, Mark Feliteau from Metro Liquor.
Don't mention that in the same sentence. You can't.
Did you have fun?
Had a lot of fun. It was illuminating and enjoyable, and just to be in a room with some of the not just British Columbia's, but Canada and the globe's best and brightest wine minds is a really...
So like royalty, right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Well, I'm talking to royalty right now.
Thank you, Your Highness. Did you have fun?
I had a lot of fun, for sure. It's interesting, learning.
Can be humbling.
Humbling. You look around. I'm a chef. I cut things and carrots and peel carrots. So to sit in this room with the wine aficionados and expertise that's in the province.
He's selling himself
Mark
short.
Is one of the best wine minds that we have here. He's a phenomenal guy, and wine and food are the same thing, and he gets both of them, and we're lucky to have him in this province.
I don't know about that, but that's a...
Liar! But I'm pretty good at fishing.
I also like getting free shit when I go into his restaurant, so yeah, I say stuff like this.
Cheers to free shit.
Where were the surprises? The whites, the reds?
I think, for myself personally, some of the surprises are, especially in the Syrah flight, where you don't like, maybe you like Brettanomyces, like Brett, and that earthy smell, and how polarizing that is, and how that came out in the flight, or in the results, and also some of the new oak and some of the American oak that was just driven into some of the wines, and how that didn't seem to sway, because I'm not a big fan of that, but you see that wine actually did pretty good in the field. So it becomes a question of what do people like, what's your personal favorite in the flight, and you just push that forward.
Now you have when I asked you that same question, Curtis, you were there for the selection committee.
I was.
So what were your thoughts going in? You think, okay, we've done this, 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 and this. This is going to be interesting. And did it work out that way? Because it's organic.
It was very challenging. I could honestly say that if I were to do this again tomorrow, I'm pretty sure my results would be different. There was a lot of good wines on the table, and a lot of it, as DJ said and as Stephen has said, this is just a snapshot of a moment in time. And there are a lot of exciting wines, and when you have various styles on the same flight, that's really where it challenges. You know, if you have Rieslings that are bone dry, you have some that are off dry, and both are valid and important. But which is it comes down to which is floating your boat, and my boat was floated often.
Okay.
Sorry, this is a family show, right?
We probably have to refer to the Farmer's Almanac. You see what kind of moon it was, or the bio calendar.
Yes, flow. Exactly.
To see how everything was tasting. Was there a root day?
When you came over to the table, what did you decide to try?
The Airleaf Pinot, because it's delicious, and the Meyer Tribute Chardonnay, super delicious.
Yeah, mine is the Tantalus Chardonnay. It's a wine I've always loved, and I ranked it kind of middle of the pack, which kind of surprised me. But a lot of times it depends, the wine you had right before or right after, how things show to you. And I was just like, I just want to make sure I still adore this wine. And for the record, I adore this wine still.
I'll see you tonight at the party.
We'll see.
You're listening to Tasting Room Radio with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
Reese Bender, Master of Wine. You were on the selection committee as well. How did that, were there any fist fights? How did that go? Was it contentious? Would you admit it?
Yes and yes. And the selection committee is more contentious than the judgment. Because the judgment is like, this is it. This is what we've got. We're judging this. There's no... The selection committee, it's all blind. It's wide open, though. But we will fight over the wines. Which ones should go through? Why not? And it's a democratic process eventually. But it's like... trying to think, it's like a parliament or court or something where everyone can stand up and support what the wine they like and why, and if others agree, great, and others can come back and say, no, I didn't think it was great for this reason. And it's like, it's hard work on the selection committee coming up with wines, because you have to agree as a group. And we know wine is not just like, oh, here's a wine, everyone thinks it's great. That's not how it works. It's like we have different opinions, but we really, worked, very, very hard to come up with these. At the end, we come to a consensus as a group, which are the best wines, and those are the ones that ended up on the table. And, four flights, 6 BC wines in each flight, so only 24 wines. We took that down from like 180 wines to that. And, it's not easy, but, it was interesting.
Was Curtis difficult?
Curtis was on Barb's panel, apparently he was difficult.
I heard there were fisticuffs, that's all. That's all I'm saying.
I will tell you one thing, and it's not about Curtis per se, but my team did the Riesling and Syrah, and we found it quite easy. Because the Riesling and Syrah, the best ones were so clearly the best. And so the way it worked is like I ran a panel and Barb Phillip ran a panel. I had Riesling and Syrah. She had Chardonnay and Pinot. So we did the initial tastings with our group. But then all panels got together and we agreed. But the Riesling and Syrah was quite clearly better, we thought. And even after Barb's panel came in and the Pinot and Chardonnay was just harder to judge because there's... more variability, more difference of opinion, more difficulty.
And the gap was narrowed.
So, and so it was, I was lucky on my selection committee to have Riesling and Syrah because we were like, boom, 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 done, okay.
I want to go back half a step because you did say that you made your choices blind tasted.
Oh, yeah. It's all blind. The whole thing is blind until, like, we just heard the results about half an hour ago, right? And... so, we didn't want to, like, we could easily get someone to handpick what they think are the best Riesling and Chardonnay and Pinot and Syrah and put those in the judgment. We'd all come up with different options. So we're like, the only true democratic way is let everyone submit their wines. So it was put out to all the wineries, submit your wines, and they were blind tasted. We had very experienced judges, a lot of the same ones on the panel here, blind taste those, come up with which the wines they thought were the best six in each category to go into this. So it's like, you know, no one can complain, right? There was every opportunity for every wine, big, small, large, whatever, to be here today. And no one knows any. Blind tasting is a very humbling thing for both the wineries and the judges, right?
Yes, I can tell you that. For 5 years now, I can tell you that. Last question. Who's the big winner here? Is it the wineries? Is it us in the room? Is it the consumer out there, or is it the BC wine industry?
I think, you know, to me, one of the negative things of these kind of events is that they rank. So there's someone is number one, someone is number two, someone is three, four, five, etc. And people, you know, look at it like, you know, the Olympic Games or whatever. But I think any wine that was in that flight today had already won. Like in another competition, those would have been the top six wines in that variety in the competition. So they were already picked as the top six wines of that flight category in the competition. So they'd already won. And then you put them against international comparisons to see, you know, do we stand up against the world, or are we just this little minion trying, you know, swimming along a little like trout in the Similkameen, Terry. And so just to be in it is great, but then we throw in these four international wines, and then we look at these benchmark wines from around the world that any wine person around the world would look at those wines and go, yeah, those are very recognizable, high quality wines.
And you're up against them.
And we put the BC wines in there blind, and we're fine. We're right in there. We're sometimes the best. We're sometimes the second. We're sometimes third. It doesn't matter. Like, but there's no one saying, oh, the international wines are here and all the BC wines are way behind. There's none of that, right? We're right in there, if not, you know, and like Spurrier said a few years ago when he was out here, it's like we're not trying to become something. We've actually arrived. We are a serious wine region. And I think the producers are starting to know that. They can now confidently produce their own style of wine without copying other regions and make amazing stuff.
Thank you, Reese.
Thanks, Terry.
You're listening to Tasting Room Radio with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
If we're going to close this part of the show, because we have a party to go to, we have to close with the best wine mind and voice and writing in Canada, frankly. That's Anthony Gismondi, Vancouver Sun, The Best of Food and Wine with Tony and Casey, and one of the primary movers and shakers of this event that we're a part of today. Anthony Gismondi sitting down in the chair for the closing position. Have you done all 5 years?
Yes, I have, actually.
How much has this tasting changed in those five, and how much has the BC wine industry changed?
I'd say it's been a long, slow, almost torturous process for me, but in the last 5 years, it's been fantastic. And I mean that sincerely, like, you know, young people jumping in, people experimenting. So really, in the last 5 years, we now start to see what the potential is in BC.
There's been an infusion of winemakers, of course, from around the world.
Yeah.
And in some cases, at the winery, they're all from somewhere else.
Yeah.
But they're making BC wine.
Yeah, I'm okay with that because I think what we need, like, we need this sort of infectious thing, you know? We have people from New Zealand, people from Australia, people from France, whatever. That doesn't really matter. What we need is we need passionate people making wine. So young British Columbians, you want to get a job, I think, you know, anybody who wants to get a job in the wine business can come here and get a job in 2 minutes and meet now a super high level of people, get enthusiastic, get passionate, and make great wine. So I couldn't be more positive about what's going on in BC than what's happening right at the moment.
Which camp do you like? Because I know that there are big conglomerates that would like to come in and chew up wineries and just take them over and do, in some cases, friendly takeovers. And then there's the nuts and bolts, mom and pop, smaller operations. I'm fascinated by the wines that they're making.
Okay, that's a really loaded question. Okay. Way to go. Okay. In terms of camping, I like the Four Seasons. But here, I guess there's two kind of big wineries. I'm a big fan. Like, if you ask me about Penfolds, incredible what they do, how they focus, how they spread information amongst themselves. It's a big winery. Same with Conchitoro, same with Antonori. There's no reason why a big winery can't be great, but there are a lot of reasons why it can be lousy too. So, but on the other hand, the small wineries are the small family wineries are great, but with no experience or no education, it's a long struggle. So it's a mix, right? If you want to go to school and do that, great. If you want to do a blend, I think that's better. But, you know, we have a nice blend now. We've got a mix of, you know, new, old, young. I think we're okay.
Was there one surprise for you on the announcements when the...
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say I was surprised about the Naramata bench, because I believe it's a sweet spot, and I think if you can't make a wine on the bench, you can't make a wine. But on the other hand, for instance, Tightrope, who showed so well in all these tastings, they've been showing well in my tasting, so I'm not surprised. Just sort of elegant, perfect, not overdone, not underdone, like right in, really solid wine. So I'm happy for them. They showed well. And I think it's a good, like, it's a message to people on the bench to not be Napa, be Naramata. I mean, you know, this sort of, this is our Napa Valley. It's not really, it's a really beautiful bench, and I think we can do stuff on that bench, but we have to be diligent. We got to work hard.
Thank you for your time.
You're welcome, man.
Anthony Gismondi, Banker for Sun, Best of Food and Wine on Tasting Room Radio.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. And since they've opened the new Crown and Thieves, it's been a glorious, sheer and utter madness. The success has seen them already sell out of four wines, The Scoundrel Punch, Chenin Blanc, Gewürztraminer, and Broken Wing Merlot. But luckily, the latest bottling run has replenished the stock with new vintages of Winemaker's Wench, Mr. Higginbotham Chardonnay, the new Little Nipper Pinot Gris, and the brand new Pinky Blinders Rosé. The wine club has been selling like crazy, and an obvious benefit is one active membership means you are a VIP at all of their locations. All the details at thehatchwines.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Enrico Winery in the Cowichan Valley. Spring bottling date is fast approaching. They're very excited about their white wine spring release, Pinot Gris The Shining Armor. Always a crowd favorite. Recent winner of a gold medal at the Okanagan Best of Varietal Awards. That new release is going to be one of the hits of the summer. And of course, their crowd favorite, Tempest Ortega. Just a note that a couple of mix and match sales are on. They're slowly opening the tasting room up. Currently Wednesday to Saturday, 12 to 4. Starting in April, it'll expand to 5 days a week from 10 to 5. And live music will start in April, Saturdays only. You can find all the details at EnricoWinery.com. And welcome to the fourth and final segment of Tasting Room Radio. It's time now to celebrate some of the winners from the fifth and final Judgment of BC. First up, Zuppi, Manuel Zuppinger, who was the winemaker and the son of the founders of Arrowleaf, who won really big. From Okanagan Falls, Larry Girellis from Stags Hollow. Also from Okanagan Falls, Jack Meyer from Meyer Family Vineyards. And we finish with Lindsay O'Rourke, co-founder, co-owner, co-winemaker at Tightrope on the Naramata Bench. Enjoy.
I was explaining to all of you folks out there on Tasting Room Radio that basically this was a two-part event, in that we tasted the wines in the competition for the Judgment of BC, and now we come to the party where the wineries get to figure out who won what. And the big winner was Arrowleaf, and they absolutely killed in the Pinot competition as well. Joe and Marguerite are not here. They're home babysitting, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. They're babysitting for me tonight, and so I decided to come instead.
Tell them who you are.
I'm Manuel Zuppinger. I'm the winemaker at Arrowleaf. I've been the winemaker since day one. It's a family-run operation. Basically, my parents and I, we founded it together. So we started in around 2001 was our first vintage.
What did you think of the announcements?
It was great. I mean, it was really, it was a great surprise to see the results, for sure, and to see how BC stacked up in general. I think it was a very strong showing, and it's always really nice to be number one.
To be number one. Yeah. Tell me about that wine.
So it's from the 2016 vintage. It's fruit from West Kelowna. It's an organically grown vineyard there. It's about two-thirds from that vineyard and one-third from a vineyard in Lake Country that we manage. It's called the Ritchie Vineyard. It was a joy to work with, really. It all kind of came together for that wine.
What was it, 2016?
Yes, it was, yeah.
Tell me about the year.
Definitely a warm vintage for BC, which helps us being in the northern end of the valley. A little bit of smoke from fires were a concern that year, but overall it didn't affect the wine too much, and just a perfect vintage for Pinot Noir for us.
Are you a Pinot winery primarily? I mean, I know you make other wines.
We make a lot of different wines, but as far as red wines go, Pinot Noir is our focus, yes. Yeah.
What clones are you using?
We're using a lot of different clones, so primarily 115, but we have 113, 828, 667, 777.
Do you grow them separately and then blend?
Some of them, yes, but mostly they're interplanted, or there's different blocks in the vineyards that will generally come in together and fermented together.
Wait a minute, you're talking about a field blend.
Yeah, sort of, I guess, if you can consider clones, then yeah, in that regard.
Yeah.
But they do, every clone is a little bit different, and they all add to the complexity of the wine. So I've got a lot of separate barrels of Pinot Noir that I assess in springtime or so, and then I decide from there what goes where.
Now, how much did you make, and how much is left in the cellar?
I believe we made around 500 cases, and there's maybe about 50 left.
And what's the price point on that number one Pinot?
It's $35.
Was it a surprise?
It was a surprise, yeah. I mean, I knew we had a good wine. It's done well at other competitions, but it really was a surprise. I wasn't expecting it.
You know, it's a stacked deck you're up against.
It is, yeah, it is. And I've worked with Pinot Noir for a long time. It was the first grape that I learned to make wine with, essentially. I went back to Switzerland to learn how to make wine, and that's what we worked with there. So I've known Pinot Noir for a long time, and it speaks to me somehow, and I feel like I understand it to some degree, although it's taken 20 years, but I really
think it's supposed to take 20 years.
Yeah, I do enjoy working with it. And, yeah.
Now, you guys have been, at times, under the radar.
Yes.
Not anymore. How are you going to handle this success?
Right. We always have been a little bit under the radar, and I think it's also, it's our personalities. We're not too showy, and but I think we'll, you know, we'll be humble the way we've always been, and we're not going to change anything.
Yeah. Well, you're going to be busier.
Yes, we will be busier, yeah, and it has been getting busier. We've noticed that of late, and with recognition like this, for sure, it's even busier.
Congratulations, Benny.
Thank you very much, Terry.
Welcome to Tasting Room Radio, celebrating all the great things we love about food and wine.
Representing that part of the Okanagan that we love dearly, Okanagan Falls, Larry Gerelis, Linda Perger is here as well, and from Stags Hollow. You walked into the room a winner. Tell me about the award that you just won tonight.
Well, I've been doing this since 1995, so it's been a long, long time in coming. And I've always felt that the Okanagan has had the ability to produce great wines. So it is really nice to see the recognition from people outside of the Okanagan and very respected in the industry to see what we are capable of doing and judging us.
And a tough room. A tough room.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell us about the wine that we're celebrating tonight from you. Tell us about that one.
The Syrah came from a little vineyard down in Asturias, a stone's throw from the border. We've been working with that grower for many years now, and he's just so dedicated to doing such a great job for us that it was relatively easy to create the grapes and the base product to create that wine.
How many
and
cases?
It's 100% Syrah, not co-fermented with Viognier.
How many cases?
We do about 450 cases.
How many are left now?
I don't know. I'm not on the accounting side. You got to talk to Linda.
I believe tomorrow morning you're going to find out.
Yeah, there could be very little. We're finding that actually wines are disappearing pretty darn quick for us. So it's a good story.
Congratulations, as always.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Larry Gerelis, Stags Hollow, walked away with one of the top-rated Syrahs in this competition in the Judgment of BC 2019.
You're listening to Tasting Room Radio.
The number one Chardonnay, as announced by DJ here at Poplar Grove, belongs to Meyer family in Okanagan Falls. I believe it was the Tribute?
Tribute, 2016.
Because we were blind until the last... I was scribbling as fast as I could.
So 2016 Tribute Series from our Naramata vineyard, actually, the first vineyard we ever owned.
You have, at last count, four Chardonnays?
Five.
Did you enter them all?
No, I entered two.
Okay.
And we had one picked, and we entered two Pinots, and we had one selected for that competition.
It was a very interesting taste because they were all different and all great. I love the fact that your Chard cut through all of that and became the number one. Tell us about that particular Chard in the vineyard.
So we've always been a big believer in not masking the fruit with either heavy oak, stirring of the lees. We want the fruit to show through, and we would like to have minimal amount of oak.
Yeah.
And so that particular vintage is probably about 20% brand new oak barrels, and then 1 and 2 year old barrels after that. So you've got 100% French oak barrels, but only about 20% new barrels. And I think that's always been our goal, is to have just a really well integrated oak Chardonnay.
It was a 2016?
2016.
Good growing year for you?
2016 was a really good growing year, yeah. So that's our Naramata vineyard. Yeah. It's on Old Main Road.
Is it a hot little pocket?
No. It's probably one of the few vineyards, and I think this is part of the, this is what I always say, of all the vineyards in Naramata, it's probably one of the coolest sites that you would find there. So the fruit hangs on there longer. We pick probably 2 weeks later than our OK Falls property, and we believe that that sort of allowing the fruit to hang and develop gives it more of that tropical fruit flavors to it.
You guys have seen a lot of awards come and go. Does it make a difference that you've made this placement, or is it just a reaffirmation of that you're on the right track?
I mean, it's both, but we've had this consistently for years, and I think that's the thing, is you see a lot of wines come and go that might get an award. Everybody can make a good wine once, but you know, we've been the top 10 small wineries in Canada 4 years in a row. This is the we got a platinum award for this Chardonnay and for 2010 vintage, and now 2016 or 17 vintage platinum award. This 2016 just got a 93-point score in the International Wine Spirit Competition, probably the largest and toughest competition in the world out of London. So there's certainly consistency with the wines that we can make a good wine out of that property. And typically, I mean, I've never had a dud out of there.
Well, congratulations. I love all your Chards. The tribute is something special.
And this is 11 vintages we've done now, so that's $55,000 that we've contributed back to charities.
And finally, how many cases did you make of that tribute, and how many are left?
That's probably only about 450 cases, and it sells out very quickly every year. There would be very little left. We have about 20 cases that we're going to sort of release out of our library with a two-bottle limit just because of this competition. Yep. And if people want to call in, it's going to be more for our wine club members, but if there's people that want to call into the wine shop, we can make exceptions just because of this is a great little award and recognition.
Does it help if I know Steve Ward?
Yes, yes, it does, of course.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Okay, thanks very much.
This is Tasting Room Radio, a one-hour celebration of wine, food, and all the great memories that go with them.
Lindsay O'Rourke is a part of the winemaking team and the ownership at Tightrope, who won big at the judgment. When they were announcing who had placed where in those top 10 lists, one name kept popping up, and it was the wonderful winery called Tightrope on the Naramata Bench. Now, check me. I have Lindsay O'Rourke with me. Check me. I have Pinot. I just jotted this down. Pinot number 7, Riesling number 4, I think, and Syrah number 1.
Yes. Yeah, it was a great day for us. I think our Pinot might have been number 8, but still pretty happy.
When you were asked to enter or submit, did you send those 3 wines and more?
Yes. So when they asked for submissions, it was for 4 wines. It was for Chardonnay, Riesling, Syrah, and Pinot Noir. And this was the flight for us because we make all of those wines, and I think that we make them all well. So I submitted wines for all of those categories, and three out of the four were picked. So we were pretty excited at that point.
Lindsay O'Rourke at Tightrope, who won big at the judgment. Take them one at a time. The Pinot. Do you consider yourself a Pinot house?
Yes. I think we've built a name for ourselves with Pinot over the last several years. 2012 was our first vintage. But every vintage, I think we're getting better, and we've won quite a few awards for that. And we have people that seek us out for Pinot and for Riesling as well, actually. Too. So.
Everything on the bench?
Everything. We're 100% Naramata bench. So the bench showed really well today at this judgment of BC, I have to say. Yeah. Not just us, but the upper bench as well. Yeah. Showed the Meyer Chardonnay. That Chardonnay was from the bench as well. So... Yay, Naramata bench, and it's really good for the new sub-appellation. I think it's it shows that we're worthy as a sub-appellation. I think people will start seeking us out.
Is this a blend of clones?
Yes, it is. Yeah, in our vineyard alone, we have about four or five clone rootstock combinations.
Do you pick them together?
Yeah, they all get picked together. It all goes into the same lot.
Is it a field blend?
A field blend, yeah.
It is a field blend.
Yes.
It's a field blend.
Yes, it all gets picked together. We don't keep anything separate. It all just goes in as one.
But you don't put field blend on the label, do you?
No, I suppose we could.
I wish you would. I want someone to step forward because I love field blends. So that's the Pinot. And the Riesling. Now, the Riesling was difficult because we knew that BC makes great Riesling. And how's it going to match up? And it was difficult. You had to stand back and really think about what you were smelling and tasting. Yeah. This Riesling was anything special about the bottling or growing?
So this is 100% estate grown. So this is from our winery vineyard. Mm-hmm. It was planted in 2007, and it as well is a field blend, which would make you happy. It's a combination of two different clones, 21B and 49. And one of them is more on the stone fruit, kind of riper side, and the other one's on the more citrusy side. So, but they're all picked together and fermented together as well. And so I think it has a lot to say about where it's grown. And I have to give my husband credit for that because he's a great grape grower.
And finally... When you find out that you have the number one Syrah?
I was happily surprised, for sure. I know that we make a good Syrah, and I love our Syrah, but to see it, you know, matched up against international wines and even Okanagan wines, like even Le Vupin, to finish next to them, that was pretty exciting because I really admire Severin and the wines that she makes, and I love their Syrah as well. So for us to get that number one position in there, I was pretty darn excited.
So how much of the Pinot is left?
Actually, all of those three vintages are all sold out.
No.
Yes. Unfortunately, I brought some wines tonight, and they were all library wines. The newer vintages are all out, though. So the 17s and the 18 Riesling around.
Same vineyards, same winemakers.
Same vineyards, same winemaking. Slightly different year, you know. It varies from year to year, but same style, same winemaker.
You're going to be busy. Your name came up three times.
Right, yeah. I was pretty darn excited when that happened. I don't want to use, expletives on the radio, but yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we were pretty excited.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much, Terry.
Lindsay O'Rourke is a part of the winemaking team and the ownership at Tightrope, who won big at the judgment.
My thanks to winebc.com, everyone who took part in this amazing event called The Judgment of BC Year 5, apparently the last, although I do like the idea, I'm not the one carrying the load. Every 5 years, it would be kind of cool. Just a benchmark kind of thing, you know? My thanks to everybody who joined me on the show. You can find the complete details of who won what, where they placed. Just pouring at this event is a big deal. Find out who placed first, second, or third, the whole list of top 10, at winebc.com or mulliganstew.ca, Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Enrico Winery in the Cowichan Valley. Spring bottling date is fast approaching. They're very excited about their white wine spring release, Pinot Gris The Shining Armor. Always a crowd favorite. Recent winner of a gold medal at the Okanagan Best of Varietal Awards. That new release is going to be one of the hits of the summer. And of course, their crowd favorite, Tempest Ortega. Just a note that a couple of mix and match sales are on. They're slowly opening the tasting room up. currently Wednesday to Saturday, 12 to 4. Starting in April, it'll expand to 5 days a week from 10 to 5, and live music will start in April, Saturdays only. You can find all the details at EnricoWinery.com.